This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Phil Scott has vowed to balance next year's budget without increasing any taxes or fees. He says it's critical to meet the state's pressing budget needs without placing any additional tax burdens on Vermonters.
Despite modest economic growth, state revenues are flat, and costs are increasing faster than we can pay. We face a budget gap of at least $70 million this year. We will uphold our obligations, but we will not fill this gap by raising taxes and fees. Vermonters do not have the capacity to pay more.
Part of the governor's plan transfers a number of education programs from the state's general fund over to the education fund. And to cover the cost of this transfer, Governor Scott mandated that all local school budgets be level funded next year and that all teachers pay 20% of their health care premiums. The plan has not been well received at the State House, and the administration says lawmakers then will have to find ways to fill this budget gap if they don't support his approach. Well, today on Vermont Edition, that's one of the tax issues we'll be looking at. Our guest today, Janet Ansel, who is the chairwoman of the House Ways and Means Committee, and also Ann Cummings, who's the head of the Senate Finance Committee. Senator Cummings is here with us. We appreciate you being on the program. Representative Ansel is up at the State House at this hour. We are broadcasting live at the noon hour, and she's on the House floor as Republicans are seeking votes on the governor's plan as an amendment to another education bill. There has been one vote to delay the consideration of school budgets to May 23rd. It was defeated by roughly a 2-1 margin, largely along party lines. Representative Ansel will be joining us as soon as the work of the House is over. And in fact, as we're speaking, she has just walked through the door. We'll give her a chance to get settled. Senator Cummings, let's start off with you. And we look at the governor's plan. Level fund budgets at the local level, push the vote back to May 23rd. What are your thoughts about the plan?
I think that the governor has some very good goals in his plan. I think that putting a cradle to grave, as he says, kind of education, put all education in one area is probably a good idea. I think we all know that the cost of education is rising. It's going up as the number of students go down, and we've been working on that. I think the problem comes with he's trying to do it all in one year, in one fell swoop. We've created this educational system over a long period of time, and you can't just do it without, by edict. Schools have been struggling to meet their budgets for years. They take it very seriously. I think it's the quickness and the number of unknowns. The teachers' retirement and retired teachers' health care has been put in the Ed Fund, but the administration couldn't tell our committee how much that's going to go up next year and the year after and the year after. That's money that's going to have to come out of the property tax. The state colleges got a $4 million boost, but it's not clear if their future funding is coming out of the property tax. And it's not clear how we're going to save all of that in K-12 education without doing some serious harm. So a lot of unknowns.
So if I understand the governor's plan correctly, he adds money to higher education. Right. He adds money to early education. As you said, he transfers teachers' retirement health care over to the Ed Fund. And he says, all right, we're going to pay for this by level funding school budgets next year. This is going to be a mandate from Montpelier.
Right.
What do you think of that?
Well, I'm not clear that we have the right to mandate what schools spend, and no one's told me they have a lawyer that said that. We don't have the bill. Representative Ansel does. So, no, it's in the House somewhere. So we're all kind of working our way through this. I think what I was hearing from – we had this Commissioner of Finance, the Secretary of Education, and the Commissioner of Taxes in. And what they were saying is, well, that's all the state's going to give them. And the governor had said, this year, if you have to spend more, you can do it on your local property tax, which is not income sensitized. So poorer people are going to be paying more. And they seem to be indicating that in future years, money will come. The state's only going to put this much in, and then you can do more later. That's what we called the foundation formula, and that was found unconstitutional. So we've got a lot of questions.
Listeners, you can join the conversation here by giving us a call at 1-800-639-2211. We're starting off talking about the governor's education plan. We're also going to branch out and talk about the income tax, the sales tax, property tax burdens. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at VermontEdition@vpr.net. Or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Representative Ansel, very glad you were able to make it. You've just come from the House floor. There was a vote this morning on pushing back the date that towns would consider their school budgets from town meeting day in March until May 23rd. Is that not a good idea?
Well, first of all, thank you for giving me time to vote. We actually had two votes this morning. One was on the proposal to move the this year's budget votes, school budget votes, to May 23rd, and the other was on a proposal to move the next year's budget votes to May 23rd. Both were defeated. But I want to go back, if I could, to the comments that Senator Cummings was made. First of all, my committee does not have a proposal on the ed funding changes. One of the challenges for me in trying to understand the proposal and sort of figure out where the moving pieces are is that it isn't anywhere. It's not in my committee. There is a bill in the Senate that we've been looking at, but it's not in the House at all. The other thing I want to say is that remind people that before Brigham was decided, people were complaining that their property taxes were too high. The question about property taxes and the concerns about the burden that they place on Vermont residents and Vermont businesses have been going on for a very long time. And if you as best as we can understand what the governor is proposing, it in bits and pieces, it goes back to the pre-Brigham days, whether it's a foundation formula or whatever it is. It's basically the state's going to decide how much state money you're going to get, and you're going to figure out the rest of it on your own. And that's a very dramatic change. I think just about everyone in the legislature is willing to look at the school finance system and figure out if we can do a better job with it. But it needs to be done thoughtfully and deliberatively, and that's really not what's happening here. And so the votes this morning, I think, reflected both in the first case, moving the date for this year, it's too soon, it's too late because budgets are already in and a lot of them are already warned and printed and, that train is moving very quickly. And thinking about moving the date for next year, it's really too soon to make that decision because we don't know if we're going to change the way the system is financed. I think we're open to a discussion about it. I think Senator Cummings is right. The governor's raised some important issues. But this is a really significant, a lot of money funding something that's really important to Vermonters, and it's not the right way to make a change.
So the governor yesterday at his press conference said, at the very least, he understands that there's a lot of opposition to level funding budgets. But he said, at the very least, delay the vote until May 23rd. That gives all of us some time to kind of work all this out, and maybe we can come to a compromise on this. Is that not a good idea?
Well, it's not a good idea because budgets are developed. School boards have been working on them for months, and many of them have already gone to the printer. They're already in warnings that have been printed. One of the other problems that we have is that there are a whole number of towns that are going to vote, have Act 46 votes first week in March. So we're asking them to come to a school meeting to vote on the Act 46 questions, which are significant, And then later to have a budget vote in the end of May. And, you know, I don't know about other towns. I know my town, Calais. People would want to debate long and hard before they would change that date. That's a question that people feel a local investment in. And I think they should be able to make that decision on their own.
A few towns, Montpelier amongst them, tried moving to a May town meeting date, and voter participation dropped off rapidly. A town meeting is when people think, it's when you vote, and you could significantly change the voter turnout by changing that date.
Senator Cummings, what about looking at this whole property tax burden question? Is that something that you think that the Senate will take up during the course of this session, a comprehensive look at it, and maybe it's time to make some dramatic changes?
We, believe it or not, we look at this every year. As Janet said, this is an annual event for us to try and do something about the cost of education. I think the frustrating thing for us is this is the one tax that people vote on. They go, they vote, and they tell us as a group how much money they're going to spend on education. We raise the money. We raise it through the state, the property tax, and then we redistribute it to meet the requirements of Brigham. And we keep looking at that. We have a bill in my committee right now that will look at putting more of income tax and have it in more income tax base. But we've got some heavy lifting to do with that. I think we've spent that. If there's any elasticity in the income tax, I think we've spent it on at least four or five different things in theory. And we're going to have to, if we're going to do anything, have to decide.
Well, I was just going to jump in with when Act 60 was created, was passed, is when we created the Education Fund.
Right.
And the general fund contribution to education is one of the strategies we have for keeping property taxes low. And the governor's proposal basically eliminates the it eliminates the boundaries, the borders around the education fund. It keeps it, but you can move money in and out. And the general fund transfer, which has been pretty sacred since Act 60, is repealed next year. I don't know if people are aware of that, but it's basically repealed. So that's when I say this is a fundamental change. And if people think their property taxes are going to be kept low, because we're going to move general fund obligations without general fund dollars, I think they're going to be really disappointed in the outcome. I believe absolutely that property taxes are going to go up as a result of this proposal.
Today in the program, we're looking at tax issues over at the State House. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Senator Cummings, you talked about there is a bill that's been introduced in the Senate that would shift everybody over to using the income tax to pay their school tax. Right now, if I'm correct, it's about 65% or 70% of homeowners pay using income sensitivity. So they pay based on their income, not the value of their property. I think Senator Polina has a bill where he talks about, let's have everybody pay the same percent for school funding. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I come from local government originally, and the property tax is the local tax, and it's been guarded very protectively. The reason it funds schools and local government is that the property tax is very stable. Property doesn't tend to go through the huge swings in value, and Vermonters may complain about it, but they pay their property taxes. And so when you vote a budget and the schools know they've got the money there when they open their doors, you just have to look at the state. Look at the state this year. The entire decrease in revenue, the gap we've got, is due to a swing in the corporate income tax. Personal income tax is the primary source for the state, and our swings are caused by ups and downs in personal income. There's a danger to schools. You can't set your budget in March and then, whoops, the stock market drops and the money's not there when you go to open the doors. So it's finding a balance with stable. I think we can look at adjusting it, but I'd want to be very cautious. I wouldn't want to make this any more unclear and unstable than it already is.
Let's go to our listeners and talk to John in Stratford. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Hey, the question is finding that balance, and perhaps one idea that you might want to consider is the level of the threshold when penalties kick in. My experience is that school boards often budget to stay under that threshold. If you wanted to reduce costs and property taxes and do it in a fair way, you could look at lowering that threshold. That way, lower spending schools would not be penalized, and it would be fairer along the board and actually result in some real savings. Something to consider.
Okay, John, thanks very much. The idea of lowering the excessive spending thresholds. Representative Ansel, is that an idea?
Well, it is an idea. It's actually something that we've done in stages that we've set in place over the next few years. So I agree. It's actually something school boards really do look carefully at. The problem with it at the moment is that we've made so many exceptions on what is counted as spending over the threshold that it's becoming less meaningful. And there is actually a proposal that's in my committee that Scott Beck has made, which would change the way we do that. And it's a little complicated to explain here, but it's another way of accomplishing the same thing. So I think the caller's right that rather than us in Montpelier saying this is how much money you have to raise and basically freezing in the inequities that exist in the system right now, we need to think, I think, more strategically about how we keep high spenders down and how we allow low spenders that need to make some movement, or districts that just have a high spending year, which sometimes happens in some of the smaller districts. We haven't even talked about Act 46, which is another another sort of mechanism. So these things, this is, again, a big system. We need to be really thoughtful about how we change it.
And it takes time. I think I had the pleasure of chairing education last year, so I've seen this from both sides. And what we've identified are the two big cost drivers are proliferation of very small schools. We do have a higher staff to student ratio than any other state. But when you've got a whole bunch of very small schools, you've got a principal and a secretary and a couple food people and a custodian. If you can cut down on that, then you change that ratio, and that's where you save money. The other big driver, and it adds, is in special ed and the number of paraeducators we had. And it was my hope to start looking at that system. The problem with a lot of this is that you need to spend some money to make you need to spend money to make money. We have some real professional trainings out there that we were trying to get out to smaller schools to help them rethink with some professional guidance how you do provide special ed services, how other schools provide them, and what's the most cost-efficient way and the way that's best for the kids. I think some schools now just get so frustrated that you just put a paraeducator with the kid and kind of just sit him there. Our schools are being asked to do so much more. Most of the schools now are hiring behavioral therapists, either from their local mental health agency or on their own, just to have someone in the school to deal with the disruptive behavior. It's coming out of poverty. It's coming out of the opiate, crisis. But I will say that it was a real eye-opener for me to sit and listen to what is going on in the classrooms.
Today on the program, we're looking at a bunch of tax issues over at the State House. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at tax issues at the State House. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. With us today, Ann Cummings, who is the head of the Senate Finance Committee, and Janet Ansel, who is the chairwoman of the House Ways and Means Committee. These two people will go a long way in determining a lot of tax policy at the State House. If you've got a comment or a question, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Roger in Rutland. Hey, Roger, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
I have a question, I guess, or maybe an observation. I did hear where the one legislator you're speaking with was saying that the lion's share of the educational fund money comes from personal income tax, and not as much from corporate income tax. And I guess my question is, this shift has been going on for a while, and I know you guys are thinking about this, but how do we change things in the state to get more of our money out of business and less of our money from personal, which means you got to bring more business into the state of Vermont, because I own a business in Rutland and we're taxed beyond belief. And our property tax levels are crushing. So I know where Scott's going with this. I get it. I agree with what he's trying to do. So I guess that's my main point is,
okay,
let's shift some of this from personal and get more business into the state that can feed more education.
All right, let's find out if your assumption is correct. Senator Cummings?
I think it's the state that's primarily reliant on personal income tax. The educate and actually consumption taxes as a whole, rooms, meals, all the rest of it, sales tax is edged out. But the Ed Fund is now a very closed system. It's funded on property tax, and then there's a portion of the sales tax and the transfer from the general fund, and I believe it's 24% of the general fund gets transferred over. It's a significant amount of money, and it's done by law. I think part of the concern is that this new proposal opens it up and puts a whole lot more expenses in there that could fall to the property tax. So that one is a concern. I think what we're hearing is this is all a balance, and we're hearing that employers can't get students now coming out of our high schools with the math skills they need to take today's entry-level jobs. I'm concerned, you know, because if we're just level funding all the schools, we're not going to make that better. We're not going to be able to provide more math, and it varies widely by school. The poorer schools can afford fewer programs, that we're not going to have the workforce we need to attract business. It's not just taxes. It's our workforce. So we need to find that balance that makes it affordable. And I think we'd all like to get some more business in here.
Let's talk to Barbara, who's calling from Huntington. Hey, Barbara, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a question and a comment. My question is, why are we not talking about cost in terms of the cost of administration? You know, it always comes down to individual classroom schools and special ed, and I think that that's the wrong focus. There's a cost of central administration that I don't get to vote on. I can vote on my high school budget, and when I vote on our local K through 4 budget, if we vote that down, we have to take the money out of our classrooms. We don't get to take the money out of that central office administration. You know, in Vermont, there are 62 supervisory unions, which oversee 92,000 students. And Hawaii has a population of 1.4 million and a statewide supervisory union. So I really think we need to reframe the question and get out of the box and look at the administration cost driver as a way of lowering costs of education. Because we've got to talk about where we lower costs, and I don't think the classroom in special ed is the place to be looking.
Representative Ansel?
Well, I think the caller makes a good point, and I think that's the kind of thing that school boards have been looking at and need to continue to look at. Act 46 is actually an effort to consolidate some of those administrative costs. I mention it kind of reluctantly because my hometown of Calais is in a very difficult position in terms of the Act 46 process, and I've been doing what I can to try to accommodate some of their concerns. But overall, I think Act 46 has had some good results in the state, and we've been hearing from people on our committee where they have been able to reduce costs. Some of those are administrative costs, mm-hmm. but I know I keep saying this, but I'll say it again. It's a big system. It's fairly complicated. And those kinds of changes are changes that take time and they take leadership. People like your caller need to keep pushing. That's really how those things get addressed eventually.
I mean, our school system was set up probably 200 years ago. It's based on social assumptions that don't exist now. Mothers are not home at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They have to go to work. If it snows, they don't get the day off, and they're not off all summer. So we've got some real issues to deal with here. And everything's kind of ground to a halt and is focusing on the governor's proposal. And there's a lot of good discussion that's not happening that needs to.
Can I just create a little bigger context for this conversation? What we haven't talked about is we haven't talked about healthcare spending right. and the general fund. The reason we're having this discussion is because the governor made a commitment not to raise taxes or fees. That was his campaign. He was elected by a comfortable margin. And the general fund, because of changes in the way Medicaid is reimbursed, is approximately $70 million short going into the development of the budget. It's not a deficit, but it's sort of the problem that we need to solve. And the governor's proposal addressed maybe half of that, sort of depending on how you look at some of those figures, which left a $35 million hole in the general fund budget. And what I say is that hole wasn't created by school boards. It wasn't created by school spending. Whatever you think about the property tax, and there are lots of reasons to want to make changes in it and lots of reasons why we need to continue to try to make it better, there is a problem in the general fund. And mm-hmm. it shouldn't be solved by eliminating or making the education fund porous, you know, getting rid of those borders, which will eventually raise property taxes, by eliminating the general fund transfer, by taking away local control, and by freezing inequities in place. And that's what the proposal does.
So as you look at the budget pressures that the governor outlined, I think starting the year with a $70 million budget gap and also the pressures and needs that many departments feel they have right now, do you think it's possible to pass a budget without any tax increases at all?
I don't know. I would like to think that we would be able to do that. Just so your listeners understand, I chair the Ways and Means Committee. We're the Revenue Committee. It's the Appropriations Committee that decides on spending. Some states, that's the same committee. It's not in Vermont. So I work really closely with Kitty Toll, who's the chair of the Appropriations Committee, and with our speaker to try to figure out how to come up with a proposal from the House that's in balance. I'm not eager to raise revenue. That's not the first place I would look. But the truth is, I don't really know. And it bothers me. It's frustrating that we're spending an awful lot of time dealing with a proposal which, frankly, I don't think addresses the problem, and I don't think it works. It's distracting us from the real work that we have to do. And I hope that the administration will work with us on figuring out a path out of the dilemma that we're in. That we don't do this, that this doesn't become a executive versus legislative thing. We have many common goals, and we should be working together.
We all pay taxes. We're all getting older. And I think, you know, affordability bothers all of us. But it is the cost of health care it's driving a lot of school spending, and it's driving the general fund spending. I think things that people don't sometimes realize is when businesses' revenue goes down, it's because the demand for their product has gone down. They cut back. They lay people off. Then they don't pay as many taxes, and the state's revenue goes down. But demand for state services goes up. It doesn't take very long before a family can't afford health care, and they apply for Medicaid. Yeah, even with unemployment insurance, health care is difficult. And so, and this has been a particularly long and slow recovery. And so that demand for state service is there. And the decision for us is, do we just tell people, we won't give you health coverage. You know, we're just, you know, cut you off, set the limits. Well, then those people show up at the hospital. They get it, usually in more acute condition. They get treated, and the cost of that is switched on to everybody else's private insurance premium. So we've been trying to break that cycle for years by getting more people insured. That was the Accountable Care Act. It's one of the main drivers of all of these cost increases, and it's very difficult. We've done more than I think any other state to crack that nut, but it's still a long and hard process, and we're losing sight. You know, you just can't fix this overnight.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John in Richmond. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Bob. Your panel's begun to try to address what I was going to bring up. My initial comment was, it's yet another year where we're solely talking about school funding. And while that's an extremely important component, it's not the only one. And we are talking about school costs as expenses, not as an investment. Because that's what it is. It's not something that you say, well, we won't spend anything on that this year and we'll take a break. You have to invest every year in the schools, in the capital, the buildings, in the teachers. And what we're not doing is taking a comprehensive approach. There are competing priorities, but we've got to set out the goals very clearly, because right now I think we have competing priorities. Some people want to lower, the healthcare costs. Some people want to increase classroom size. Some people want the test scores to go up. Some people want different measures. We're not talking about the same things. We're going in different directions. And so when we're presented with a difficult situation, we're not even on the same page. My long-term concern is that this is a short-term approach to a long-term project.
Okay.
And until we start talking what the goals of the education system are, how we effectively measure, and how do we take advantage of all the innovation that's going on in individual schools.
John, thank you very much for your phone call. Representative Ansel, you alluded to this earlier, I think, that this is actually a very complicated and complex problem.
It is, and I think this particular proposal has distracted us from really looking at it the way we need to look at it. That's February 3rd, so we've got time. But the caller reminds me that, and something that I want to say, I certainly support, and I think most of my colleagues support, putting more money in higher education.
Absolutely.
I think most of us support, probably all of us, putting more money into child care. I certainly do. It's something I feel strongly about. But I want it, if we're going to do it, let's be open about what the costs are and how we're going to pay for it. And so I feel we need to sort of get over where we are right now, and then we need to have the kind of thoughtful conversation that I believe we can have about those goals, about the caller who talked about economic development, how we're going to do that. How we're going to deal with health care costs. We, in this state, we're lucky that we pretty much agree on most of these goals. We're getting bogged down in sort of how you get there at the moment. It's disappointing, but I think we'll get past it.
Today on the program, we're looking at a bunch of tax issues at the State House. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we'll look at some other tax issues as well. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at tax issues over at the State House. With us today, the chairwoman of the Senate Finance Committee, Washington County Senator Ann Cummings, and also Janet Ansel, who is the chairwoman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. Maybe in the time that we have left, we can buzz through a couple of issues and get your thoughts on it. Senator Cummings, let's start off with this idea about whether or not Vermont should be taxing Social Security benefits. Vermont's one of five states in the country that fully taxes these benefits. There's a plan that would phase this out over a period of time. What do you think about that?
As one who can collect Social Security, I think it's a great idea. I think the problem is there's several things out there that, you know, we would like to not tax. The problem is we have to make up that revenue, and that this is just a hard time to do that. But I think it's a goal. It's something to work towards.
I'd like to jump in on that if I can. We've had a presentation on that, on the issue generally last week from our joint fiscal staff, and a couple bills that we have presented this morning. People, because of the way our tax system is constructed, people think they pay 100%. They pay on 100% of their Social Security. They don't, actually. The federal treatment of Social Security benefits, which is a phased-out exemption, goes from 100% to 15%, is actually carried through to your Vermont return. So no matter what your income level, 15% of your benefits are exempt. Most people don't know that. We are actually talking about ways of making that apparent on the form. And then we've also talked about ways of maybe increasing those the salary, I mean, the income at which those exemption amounts kick in. Totally exempt, $30 million, that would be the cost to the state. That's probably not going to happen. But maybe there's something that we can do that would give a greater benefit to people at lower income levels. Don't know if we can do it, but we're certainly looking at it in the committee.
So are you basically saying that right now part of folks' Social Security benefits are tax-free?
Yes.
And so
no matter what income level you are at, it's 15%, and it goes to 100% at very low income levels. That's what happens at the federal level. Problem is at the federal level created the breakpoints, 20, 25 years ago, and they haven't changed. So it might be $35,000 for a couple, where it's 100% exempt. If you grew that by inflation, it would be $74,000. So they're greatly out of date. But for everybody at any income level, 15% is exempt.
Senator Cummings, a couple of years ago, we had a blue ribbon tax commission that looked at the sales tax and suggested that perhaps Vermont might want to consider putting services under the sales tax. I mean, right now, when I get my car fixed, I pay a sales tax on the part, and I don't pay sales tax on the labor. We're moving more and more to a service economy. Should the legislature take a look at including services under the scope of the sales tax?
I think we should. I think, you know, as they say, when you're taxing, you go where the money is. We started out with property because that's where the money was when this was an agrarian society. We went to sales because you bought things if you had money. But now people we're a service-based economy. I don't think we're going to suddenly, you know, it starts out with, well, you're going to tax my hairdresser. No. But how come if I go buy a map for my kid's school project, I pay a tax on it? But if I buy a survey from a surveyor, I don't pay any tax. They're essentially a piece of paper that draws the lay of the land. You know, there is something to be looked at. What gets left out of once you get through the, oh, you just want to tax us some more, is that if you expand the base, you could lower the rate, and lowering the rate would help the folks on the New Hampshire border a great deal. That's another constant pressure. So it's worth looking at.
So I think I look at it a little bit differently. I suppose ideally if we were creating a system from scratch, we would include services. I think it's really, really hard to make that change. And I've become one of the people who's, I think, sort of crossed that off my list as possible things to do. But where we are losing sales tax revenue is to online sales, so-called remote sales, the internet. And we have been making great efforts over the last few years to try to recoup that money. That's money that's currently owed, not a new tax. The service tax would be a new tax. Mm-hmm. Capturing those taxes from online sales is not new. It's not a new tax. It would be new revenue for successful doing it. And we've actually made some movement in that direction that I think is feeling a little more promising than where we've been in the past.
And you got Amazon to do
this.
Yes, right?
Amazon is going to voluntarily collect. That's great news. It's a big issue for bricks and mortar retailers in the state as well. So it's a competitive issue, and it's a fairness issue.
And we've been working on that for years. I mean, Amazon is a major victory. We've got a couple of bills in now. Airbnb, all the online, that one's been done. But there's other little ones which we need to find a way to work through, and we've got a couple of bills that are working on that.
I'd rather make sure that we collect what's owed rather than create something new.
Senator Cummins, you mentioned the Airbnb. We got this email from Veronica in Middlebury saying that I have an apartment that I rent short-term through Airbnb. I derive very little income from this, and I don't feel that I and similarly situated Vermonters looking to earn a little extra money to cover property taxes should be treated like hotel and motel operators and multinational corporations like Marriott. She thinks there ought to be a lower tax rate.
You know, I have some sympathy. I have a booth in a little antique shop, and I have to collect the state sales tax, and I pay the same rate as Walmart, and they have accountants. But at the present law is that she is, and Airbnb is going to collect the tax for her and send it. It's not coming out. If she's charging them $100 a night, she's going to get her $100 a night. Her customer is going to be charged. They're the ones that owe the tax. She doesn't. They're going to be charged the extra percentage, and that one shouldn't affect her at all.
Well, she may feel that what she can charge, that the consumer will take that tax into consideration as well.
They will, and they'll take it into consideration when they look at Marriott. It's the competitive. But I believe we tried doing tax preferential for wine, in-state wine, and a couple other things. And there was an interstate commerce that says we cannot treat in-state and mom-and-pop stores differently tax-wise in-state than we do everyone. So we have to do that same, is my understanding.
We're going to see if we can get a very quick call in from Robert in Bethel. Hey, Robert. Welcome to the program.
Great show. Oh, by the way, just a quick comment. Those two callers from Huntington and Richmond, I think they should join the committees at the State House, the gal and the guy.
We agree. Yeah.
I think it would be pretty aspiring or enchanting or however you want to say it. But I have a question for your guests, and thank you if you can answer. I've been very curious about the lotteries, the Vermont Lottery's annual budget, what it costs to run it, and then also how does the money flow into and out of the education fund. From what I understand, since 1999, I think it was $308 million, it might be higher than that, has been given to the education fund, and it's a big mystery on how it works.
Robert, we're running out of time, but we'll see if we can get an answer for you, Representative Ansel.
It's basically all the profits from the running the lottery. You know, they take out administrative costs, they take out prizes, they take out, I don't know, maybe there's some contracting, some money that goes to the vendors. and the rest of the money goes into the education fund. It's been hasn't grown over a period of time. Personally, I think that's okay because I'm not a fan of the lottery, but it's been relatively stable. For quite some time.
And it's something in the neighborhood of $25 or $30 million?
$22 or $23 is what sticks in my mind, but I'm not sure. Something like that. And so it's important. It's actually quite small relative to the money that the education fund, which is like $1.6 billion or so, the total money in the fund.
Well, it's been a great discussion of the world of taxes. We need to have you two back towards the end of the session so we can see how all this got worked out. That would be a great program as well.
We look forward to it.
Yes.
Many thanks to our panel today, House Ways and Means Chairwoman Janet Ansel and Senate Finance Chairwoman Ann Cummings. That is Vermont Edition for today. Our program is produced by Rick Sengary, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Jake Rusnak directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.